I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX's Radiotopia, welcome to the heart . This is Bodies, a mini-season about defiance. I'm your host, Caitlin Prest. It's not me.
It's you.
What is a body, anyway?
Skin,
bones,
organs,
hair,
teeth,
nails,
blood,
fat, veins. Is that really all a body is? Nothing, even something as unique and diverse and personal and ever-changing as our bodies, lives in a vacuum. The way that we shape and decorate and nurture our bodies. The way that we dismantle our bodies into disparate parts, choose favorites and unfavorites. Our bodies are products and reflections of our world. No body is uniform. Each one carries its own histories. It holds our traumas and our triumphs. The rivers, lakes, and ecosystems of ourselves. We do things to make our body feel good. And we do things to make other people feel good about our bodies. Sometimes you look over at the other body and you're like, man, I wish my body had that. It never ends. The world always seeming like it's demanding more from our bodies than we can ever give. Culture, insatiable for perfection. But it's not really about us, is it? This series is a celebration of all the ways that we resist. It's a series that was honed, nurtured, and brought to fruition by Mitra. Here she is.
On a day like any other in my late 20s, I woke up and I do what I always do. I drink a glass of water, poop, shower, brush my teeth. Wait, what the fuck? What the fuck is that? A thick, black hair, about a centimeter long, had grown out the tip of my chin, as if overnight. How long had it been there? How had I not noticed? To be fair, most of my hair is thick and black, like everywhere. My whole life, I've been watching every woman in my family meticulously groom. I remember a wedding a few years ago. My aunt, my grandmother, my mom, and my cousin, all sitting at different corners of a hotel bed, with magnified hand mirrors, plucking every stray and out-of-place hair off of their face. But on that particularly harrowing morning, worrying that if I plucked it, three more would grow in its place, I decided to let it be. As the day went on, when I was bored, my hands would wander to my face, and I would feel it out, running it through my thumb and my forefinger, trying to figure out its exact length and diameter. How can something so small take up so much space? To find out what happens to my chin hair, tune in next time. The story is not over yet. Our bodies know what they want. Never intentional, but intuitively. Much like the single chin hair that stands in defiance, and the many more that will join it. Our first story in this mini-season is about resistance. It's about a body that's not ready for what's ahead. Or maybe it's not the body. This is Abigail.
Now I feel embarrassed. I'm a person. People have sex. That's okay, Abigail.
It's not me.
It's you.
I've always had very specific ideas around sex. Maybe it was because of church camp. I don't know. Every summer while growing up, hundreds of people would attend a Baptist church conference. I called it church camp, but it was a family retreat, so my parents were there too. One year, on the last day of camp when I was 12 or 13, some of the youth camp counselors decided to have a heart-to-heart with those of us who hadn't been picked up by our parents yet. I didn't contribute, but I was deeply interested in the conversation and didn't want this part of camp to end. One of the counselors started to talk about virginity. He said it was something really special, something you should save, because if you didn't have it, what else would you give your husband when you got married? There were a lot of presumptions in his words, but I bought it. When it came to having sex for the first time, I battled between waiting until marriage, waiting for the perfect partner, and just getting it over with. I have friends in all three categories, and either way you spin it, it's a struggle. When I was 22, I went to a holiday party at my friend's house. I was a bit early, so there weren't that many people there yet. But there was this guy. Let's call him Sam. He had curly brown hair and a cute face. We noticed each other immediately, but I was trying to play it cool, so I ignored him for most of the time. Over the course of the party, we ended up talking a bit, and then he stepped outside. And I followed him. And then he kissed me. We ended up spending the night together. We tried to have sex, but it didn't work. I had tried to relax and just felt like I couldn't, or like I couldn't tell if I was relaxed or not. It was as if a wall had gone up and his singular purpose was not to get the wall down, but to crash through it, no matter what it felt like for me. At first, I tried to pretend it didn't hurt, but then I wondered why I was doing that and began to voice my pain. I was embarrassed. I thought this should be easier, but we were also on a futon in the middle of my friend's living room. I felt like I had finally worked myself up to not just the idea of having sex, but the act itself. And now here I was, unable to make it work. But I was pretty sure that this wasn't what sex was supposed to feel like. But I've come to learn about a lot of women who have had similar experiences. This is my friend from college, Karina.
Pain, lots of pain.
And this is my friend Michelle.
I would clench up.
And this is Jess E. Jelsma.
It just feels like all of my muscles inside my vagina just close off or clamp down.
An inability to even have penetration because both feeling like things didn't fit and that it was so painful.
It felt like something that like I was like sort of gritting my teeth through.
All the muscles in my legs and in my thighs become really tight too, and my legs physically try to close.
And it's kind of like a sharp pain. Sometimes, especially like earlier on, I would just like push through it because I didn't want to disappoint my boyfriend.
My arms also come out and try to push the person away.
It was worse to push through it because then it's just like feeling like something that you have to endure rather than enjoy.
These are some women I talked to about their experiences with penetrative sex. And I felt for the first time that I wasn't alone and it might not be my fault or my body's fault. I wondered if I had missed my chance and now I was destined to be stuck with men who seemed as if they would just do. The type of men who wouldn't care if I was in pain.
I would also feel like guilty about it or like frustrated or angry.
The opposite of arousal.
The challenge and the awkwardness and the like shame, even if you part of you recognizes that it shouldn't be something that you feel shame about.
Running the gamut from like shame to sadness to anger.
I felt like I reacted pretty obviously in explicit and, I don't know, less direct ways that I was in pain and it was not a pleasant experience, but did not have a partner that immediately stopped and having that be heard.
Just kind of like a shutting down, both like emotionally and to the experience, even if sex is possible, just kind of completely tuning out of what's happening, as if I'm kind of like above my body and not inside of it.
Feeling pain, not having that acknowledged, and so then just like feeling very small.
I tried to have sex again, and this time I knew it wasn't a fluke. We ended up back at his place. We were there for hours. He liked me because I listened to him, though I didn't end up saying much about myself. But once things started moving with this new guy, I didn't know how to stop it. I would tell him I didn't want to do something, but eventually he would stop asking and do it anyway. He wanted to have sex, and I didn't, but somehow we ended up trying to have sex anyway. When penetration still wasn't possible, I felt concerned, but also a bit like my body was protecting me from something I didn't really want to do. He asked me if I wasn't letting him in on purpose, and I wondered if that was something that could actually happen, if there were some women out there who could just will their body not to let someone in, and it was so. "Sorry," I told him. "I'm not doing it on purpose."
My partner just, like, was dismissive.
Partners who are annoyed, partners who say, "Oh, you just need to push through it."
Not even really acknowledging what was happening.
Coaxing me or coercing me to keep doing it and that things are going to, like, stretch out and it's going to stop hurting. We just need to, like, wear it in a little bit.
Just was not open to the possibility of, like, oh, it was too uncomfortable or unpleasant.
My current boyfriend would make jokes, I guess you could call them, born of frustration. I think that did not sit well with me, like that he would, you know, find a concubine or something.
Blame that I'm purposely doing this in order to like sabotage the relationship.
Even when I mentioned like, oh, like maybe we should like use lube or something, he like just like made a joke and was like, why would we do that?
And, you know, I want sex to be good, too. Like, it's supposed to be something that, like, should be fun and not the source of stress and anxiety.
After sex didn't work for the second time, I wondered if there was something medically wrong with me. But then I found an essay called Frigid by Jess E. Jelsma. She's one of the women you've been hearing from. It was about vaginismus. Vaginismus refers to when the pelvic floor muscles contract during any kind of penetration, making it either impossible or very painful for anything to go into a vagina, even something as small as a tampon. It can be a reflection of an emotional state, like your body responding to some sort of expectation of pain, or it can be related to a previous trauma, but the result is the same. Nothing can go in, and if it can, it hurts. Really badly. Here's Jess again.
I think a lot of men seem to have a hard time understanding because they don't associate sex with pain at all. So it's hard for them to understand why you would be dreading it or anxious about it. And even if you can tell them this is hurting me, I don't think they can really understand, especially like a heterosexual guy, what that means to associate pain with sex.
Though our experiences were different, despite having conversations with my friends about this, reading it was the closest I had felt to validation. I don't think I ever felt like I was making it up, but now I knew I wasn't. I went home to California and I went to a doctor I had never seen before. She was young and white and pretty. I can't remember if I noted a wedding ring. I always worried about being judged by my doctor. Whenever I went and told them that I hadn't had sex, they told me how good that was. I told the doctor I didn't think I had vaginismus, but I couldn't figure out what it was. After examining me, she agreed that I didn't seem to have vaginismus. We sat across from each other, and she said that if the situations hadn't been good, or if I hadn't been comfortable, maybe that's why it hadn't worked. She said to make sure to use condoms and lube, that both things could make it easier. And I think she said that it would happen in time, though I may just be adding that part to comfort myself. Here's Jess again.
I met my ex-husband when we were in college. At the very beginning, he was very like, it's going to be gentle and I'm going to go slow. He really liked the idea that he was going to come in and fix my sex problem. Then it became condescending, angry, bitter. You're doing this almost like to hurt me or to frustrate me or to sabotage our relationship. So I ended up kind of in this like cycle of not really wanting to be in that relationship, but kind of feeling like I needed to try harder and that things would eventually get better was always his philosophy, which kind of goes along with the sex. The mantra was always, well, it'll get better when we moved to Minneapolis when we were in college. Or then after that, it will get better once we're not living in Minneapolis anymore and you're in an MFA program and you're like happier. And then the sex will be better and the relationship will be better. So it kind of just kept being that same mantra of things will eventually get better up until us getting engaged, even though I didn't really want to get engaged. And then we started planning the wedding, and so much time and energy and money had gone into planning the wedding that it became this beast that could not be stopped. And so we did end up getting married.
Jess was with this man for 4 years, and the whole time they were together, they pretty much were unable to have any pleasurable penetrative sex. I feel like I should highlight something here. With her ex-husband, sex was one of the contentious issues at the center of their relationship. They were unable to have penetrative vaginal sex in a way that was pleasurable for her. But Jess has always been able to find pleasure by herself.
So we had a one-bedroom apartment when we were in Minneapolis, and he would be asleep because he had to get up earlier than I did. And I would literally be out in the living room, like, steal my vibrator from the nightstand before he went to bed and be like, yeah, I would like be masturbating out in the living room while he was asleep. So I was still sexual and still had sexual urges and desires.
If the goal of intimacy between two people is pleasure and pleasure isn't happening, then why continue with the same thing? What is the problem when pleasurable sex can still occur without penetration?
From how that relationship played out, I felt like a broken person, both like sexually and psychologically, just broken, like something was wrong with me. And so I kind of felt trapped in hoping things would get better because I thought if we broke up, things were just going to be really bad for me because no one else would ever love me. No one else would ever deal with my sexual problems. No one else would ever deal with my emotional problems. You know, whatever those may be.
While Jess was in grad school, she met someone else, someone she really liked.
I was kind of like, hey, I want to do this. I want to have sex with you. That doesn't sound very romantic. We had this emotional connection that I hadn't really had with any other boyfriend or partner. And that sounds super cheesy, but I think I just felt much more comfortable with him. So when I made the decision to have sex with him and I made the decision to sleep with him, for some reason, just psychologically, because it was such an active decision on my part and it was completely mine, I pursued him. I was the aggressor in a lot of ways. I was the one who told him I was attracted to him and that I liked him. So for some reason, I feel like I just felt like I had a lot more control. And I think that's the reason why the first time we had sex and since then, like I didn't have an issue with sex not working or vaginismus. It just worked. It was like a magic moment.
When my friends thought of times where they had what they considered to be good sex, they were comfortable. They felt like they had some control over their bodies and the situation.
It's been better if like I initiate.
Before I'm even able to get to a place where it's thinking about like, what feels best or like, what do I want to be doing? Like, I just have to have trust and know that I'm on the same page with the person.
The first time penetrative sex actually worked, I was seeing a new guy. We both had gotten swept up in the whirlwind of getting to know each other, and in the process of that, I told him about how I hadn't had sex basically ever because I hadn't been able to have sex. and eventually I sent him Frigid. I was so nervous, but he thanked me for sending it to him and said it forced him into perspectives he hadn't known to consider before. A couple of weeks later, we tried it out. This time, I told him that if it didn't work, it wasn't me. It was my body. I would later realize this wasn't quite true. But for now, it actually worked. I don't think it was necessarily all about him, but I do think I was in an environment that I completely controlled. We were in my bed, in my apartment, on the sheets that I had bought. I felt that if I said no, that would be respected. I felt that he wanted sex to be good for me, just as he wanted it to be good for him. I don't think I have vaginismus in the medical sense, but emotionally, it's the closest thing that describes what I've experienced. When I've had partners who were impatient or only interested in sex with me in a way that served them or their ego, it didn't work. Combine that with the societal shame I've learned around my body, sex has been fraught. When I've had partners who've considered ways that we can both feel safe and comfortable, who ask me what I want, even if I don't know what that is, sex can actually be good. I think I've learned that for me, sex is really emotional, even if I don't want it to be. And I don't mean that in a stereotypical way. But how I feel about the person I'm with and the ways that we have been in relation to each other really affect what happens between us in a sexual realm. I don't want to question whether or not the person cares about my well-being or if I'm just a vessel toward their pleasure. Because ultimately, I think pleasure can start and end in different places than we usually think it does.
This story was written and produced by Abigail Barriola, edited and scored by Mitra Gaboli. Special thanks to the women who talked to Abigail about their vaginas and sex, Karina, who would like to remain anonymous, Michelle Kefapolis, and, of course, big thanks to Jess E. Jelsma. If you want to read her article, Frigid and the Rumpus, go to theheartradio.org. We're going to have tons of links for you. Also, if you and your partner are having issues sort of like the ones you heard in this story, there are a lot of other things that you can do to get off. Here are some of my favorites. Mutual masturbation, aka handjob. You know, a handjob can get really, really sexy if you use a bunch of lube. Dry humping. Direct stimulation of the vagina with the mouth or the hand. Frottage. Spanking. Nibble play, role play. Tantra. Outer course. And, of course, the sidecar, which is my personal favorite. It's a fancy way of saying jerking off next to each other, coined by Samara Brieger. The Bodies Beats you heard at the beginning were produced by Alan Watts. Editorial advising by Molly Osberg. Additional editorial support by Samara Brieger and Julia Alsop. Fact-checking help also by Julia Alsop. The Saga of the Hair was written by the one and only Mitra Gaboli. And will continue at the beginning of each Bodies episode. This episode was the first episode in our Bodies mini-season. Three more will be hitting your feed in the weeks to come. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Heart Radio. You can follow me at Caitlin Prest. The Heart is me, Caitlin Prest, Mitra Gaboli, Phoebe Wang, Jen Ng, and Sharon Mashihi. Special thanks to Radiotopia, The Knight Foundation, and AdCirc. That's it. I love you.
Radiotopia.